Mini episode 430 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 430. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here for a tremendous segment today. We're going to be having a great one. Two experts on horse racing, one in-house and one who is one of our favorite guests that we've had on previously. We're going to be discussing, of course, this weekend's Belmont Stakes and the prospects for a Triple Crown this year. I want to mention also, too, when I speak of our in-house experts that we have, when we did our Triple Crown preview, we had them both on. One of the two not able to join us here today, although I did get a few notes from him that I will be bringing up in the conversation, would be remiss if I didn't mention good friend Bob Glassman. Want to send out congratulations to him. His nephew, Rick Glassman, part of the new hit show on NBC, Undateables, which I understand premiered last week to a 30% better than could have been expected debut rating. So I want to certainly send our congratulations to the entire Glassman family for that one. But as far as the gentleman joining us here today, I spoke of one of our favorite guests that we've had on previously, and we've had him on to discuss horse racing, among other subjects. And again, he is somebody who has a major footprint on both major market radio and national radio. National radio with CBS Sports, major markets with WIP in Philadelphia and WFAN in New York. So it's our pleasure to bring back on the program. We've had him on before. And again, he has a lot of special knowledge on the subject of horse racing among all these subjects that he talks about. Generally, he's one of the best you can talk to in the media on this subject, so it's our pleasure to welcome back Jody Mack. Jody, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm good today. The question is, how good am I going to be at Saturday at about 6:30 or 7 o'clock after they run the third leg of the Triple Crown? Then we'll really know how good we are.
Well, depends on what ticket you put down, or tickets probably plural. We'll be getting into that, I suppose. When I speak of one of our in-house guys that we have, that would be, of course, good friend Steve Callis, who, of course, can be heard regularly delivering his sports/legal analysis on WFAN in New York, and also general sports broadcasting on the STN.net, formerly SportsTalkNetwork.com, and specifically also on WVOX Radio and other outlets probably too numerous to mention, SNY, et cetera. Good friend Steve Callis, it's good to get him back on the show, our in-house horse racing expert. Steve, how are you today, my friend?
Everything's good. Good to be with you and Jody Mack as well.
It's a true pleasure to get to break this down here with you guys. I'll start by directing a question to you, Jody, and this is something that kind of just came to me from my observations of the last couple of weeks, and I understand between the three of us, I'm by far the lightest on the knowledge of the subject matter. I'm more of the casual horse racing fan, but it has just kind of struck me anecdotally watching how this has played out and watching how California Chrome really looked like he almost got ran down in both races and didn't. My sense is that the cumulative quality of the Triple Crown field this year is maybe not what it has been in some years past, and not to take anything away from California Chrome, but that might be accounting for why he has a very good chance to win the Triple Crown. Do you think there's anything to that?
I think that's very fair, but you never know coming into any individual year how deep the field is going to be, how good the crop of three-year-olds is. It can be a great year. It can be an okay year. It can be a mediocre year. It can be a poor year. And the funny thing about it is you don't really know it until after it's over and said and done, because you have your Florida Derby winner, your Arkansas winner, your Memorial winner, your San Anita Derby winner and the like. And, you can compare times and buyer ratings and everything else, but they have to get in against each other in a Triple Crown trail. And then you really get the finishing tail after it's over and done with, and who goes on to win the Haskell and the Travers, and who jumps into Breeders' Cup competition at the end of the year as a three-year-old. So as we're going along, we do not know. We can speculate, we can guess, we can compare to previous years and have a belief on it, but it's not proven until after the year is over. If you're asking me, yes, I think this is an average at best year of three-year-olds, and California Chrome is taking big advantage of that.
Exactly. That's how it had seemed to me. And certainly, Steve, again, we're not sitting here with a crystal ball because, again, neither you nor I nor Bob Glassman was saying this prior to the start of the Triple Crown season. We weren't opining that it was a horrible field or a great field. Again, as Jody said, these things manifest themselves, and then you can kind of look back on it and see how it played out. But what is your sense of the depth of the field in the races that we've seen thus far and what that's likely to tell us about on Saturday?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think Jody Mack's right. I think there's almost an analogy here to someone looking at the NFL draft where you're really not going to know for 2 or 3 or 5 years, in the case of quarterbacks, how strong that draft was. To me, this is an average group. The other interesting thing that I've seen is that most of these horses who maybe will challenge California Chrome, certainly in the first two legs of the Triple Crown, were come from behind horses, Wicked Strong, Metal Count, Ride on Curlin, those he's got a little speed, those kinds of horses. So I think everything is broken right for California Chrome, and that he hasn't gotten into trouble in the Derby, which is a minor miracle, and the Preakness. So we'll have to see if he runs into any kind of problems in the Belmont. But yes, I agree with Jody. You really don't know till later in the year. And I think there is kind of an analogy with a draft of a professional sports league.
Well, that makes sense. I can understand that as an analogy, as I think most could. And it's interesting, of the horses that were named there, Jody, there was a name that just came out that our friend Bob Glassman had given me in his notes when I spoke with him off air today, Wicked Strong. That is one that he sees in particular as a real threat to California's Chrome's chances at immortality on Saturday. What say you about his odds on possibly being the spoiler?
Yes, I think he's one of the main components in the race and could very well win the race. I've gone back this week and watched the Kentucky Derby another 3 or 4 more times, a couple other races leading up to this, and horses that I do like. Strong had it much the worst in the Kentucky Derby. Didn't break well, had trouble right from the start, as a matter of fact, breaking from the far outside position, tried to get in as close as he could so he didn't run the entire race wide, and then had traffic troubles in the stretch. Now, don't get me wrong, California Chrome won the Kentucky Derby fair and square, and Wicked Strong wasn't catching him that day, but if he had a better trip, if he had less traffic to deal with, he's probably that much closer. So now you try and figure, well, can he make up that distance 5 weeks later? Well, he's 5 weeks fresher. We know that because California Chrome had to do what he did in the Preakness just to get to the Triple Crown doorstep. So if he improves off it and his works look pretty good, less traffic in this field of 11, so he's not going to have to make as drastic a move, nice sweeping turns and a nice enough long stretch at Belmont that if he's good enough, then he should be able to run with California Chrome.
Jody, let me ask you a follow-up about that. You mentioned previously the Beyer numbers, and that takes me back to one of Beyer's books. I think it was The Winning Horse Player I had read some years ago. When you're talking just now about the concept of having a bad trip at the Kentucky Derby, I've read some of Andrew Beyer's writings on the subject. Expand on that for a moment, please, on the notion of how it can be a little bit deceiving if you watch a horse under the least optimal circumstances and about how that may not tell you much going forward here, and about how you have to throw out certain races, because it sounds like that's a good example of what you're speaking of here.
And I wouldn't even call Wicked Strong's Kentucky Derby a throwout. He wasn't just stone cold stopped or taken up at any point. A horse stops in front of you, a horse cuts you off. You get forced significantly wider than you want to by another horse that's not necessarily your horse that you're picking and or wagering on's fault or problem, but you've got to learn to deal with it. He just got caught in bed. When he wanted to make the move, the hole wasn't there. Coming down the stretch, I actually think, and sometimes you do fault the jock. I think the jock had him a little too far inside. He was a outside running horse and liked to be outside. He worked so hard to make sure that he didn't take the overland route that I think he got him in a little tight, so he just didn't have the ability to make his move when he wanted to make his move in the stretch. And again, I don't think he was going to win the race, but that's what happens in a 20-horse field. Even as you get to the stretch, there are still a ton of horses that are in contention. Some are slowing, some are dying, haven't gotten a mile and a quarter before, and if you've got something left in your horse and the horse in front of you doesn't, you have to deftly negotiate your way around it, and that wasn't the case with Wicked Strong in the Kentucky Derby.
Absolutely, and again, as you said, field slashed almost in half from the Kentucky Derby, so there will be more open space as well as being a longer track to run on this time. Steve, what are your thoughts on Wicked Strong and the chances of being the spoiler on Saturday?
Well, I liked Wicked Strong in the Derby. He was my pick. I liked Right on Carlin for second, and he was my pick in the Preakness. I think maybe I just wanted to bet for the only time in my life in 18-19 exacta box in the Derby. I still kept the ticket. I'm not sure why. But I agree. He was in trouble, not shut off trouble. But this is what happens certainly to horses in the back in the Derby. You know, I gave Right on Carlin a shot in the Derby because Calvin Borel was going to be on the rail. But unlike his Derby victories, he got blocked off two or three times up the rail and never could fire. I thought they actually both raced pretty well. And Carlin was good in the Preakness, but Right on Carlin was good in the Preakness, but was not going to get to California Chrome anyway. I think Wicked Strong can win. My concern, and we talked about this before, Rick, horses that close from the back, you'd think in a mile and a half race they're going to be okay. They're going to have the long stretch, the sweeping turns, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is you pretty much have to be on or near the lead at the top of the stretch. Horses don't come from seventh or eighth place, seven or eight lengths back, to win the Belmont, even though we would think that's a possibility. So my concern with all these horses that we talked about before, including Wicked Strong, and I'm not going to pick him in the Belmont, I assume we'll make our pick shortly, is that they're not going to be close enough. And by close enough, I mean, again, first, second, third, fourth, two, three, four lengths off. I just don't know pace-wise if they're going to be close enough. So when they do kick in, I don't know if they're going to be close enough to run down California Chrome or Tonalist, who might be the other horse who'll be on the lead.
Great points there. By the way, you mentioned Calvin Borel. I have to ask you about this, Steve. I had to giggle when I was watching the replay at the Preakness because it's one of those things you don't catch in real time. Is it very common for him to go, I'd say, almost diagonally to the rail there? They were showing the break there for the horses. Of course, he was in, the second to last spot outside. I don't know that I've ever seen somebody go to the rail that quickly in that manner. Is that common for him when he's that far out?
I think it's common for him. I don't know that it's common for anyone else. But, again, he's won three derbies doing that. And I really thought he could possibly win a fourth because I liked Right on Carlin. If you look at his race in the Arkansas Derby, which nobody seemed to comment on, he was like two or three wide in the first turn, three, four, five wide in the final turn. I thought he had a big shot. But, again, that assumes you're going to go by 15, 16, 17, 18 horses, and I never thought it could be done until Calvin Borel did it, and he did it multiple times. So this time, if you just watch him in the Derby, it just didn't happen. But, yes, he's known to make left turns from the 15, the 10, the 18. It looks bizarre, but his theory is, as you know, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line, or in the case of a racetrack, just stay near the rail. That's the closest way around the track. It certainly didn't work for him in this year's Derby, but I thought before the race he had a chance to pull it off again.
Well, if you watch track and field, I guess the theory holds up because they start from the staggered places on the oval. But, Jody, that's not a very common thing in the industry, is it? I mean, that was a pretty extreme example, like I said, of almost going diagonally to the rail there. We know that he likes to get there. I was startled when watching the replay at how drastic it was.
No, Borel is different than anybody else. Nobody does it as drastically as he does. And, yes, he has made it work to the tune of Kentucky Derby championships, so you can't second guess it. It does when you watch the replay over and over again. It does look so drastic. It looks like you're taking the horse's momentum away, which you are, because you just can't run sideways as fast as you can run straight ahead. But if you do save enough ground, then everything's got to fall into place. You're kind of putting yourself in the racing god's hands that you're going to have just the opening at just the right time when your horse needs to make his move. If everything falls your way, you can end up winning the race that way, and Borel has done it. It didn't happen this time, this past Kentucky Derby.
No, it didn't, but it was definitely interesting to watch. I have to say also, too, before we get to making our picks and before we go full circle on the analysis, certainly want to talk about this as a media story, which it certainly is. Both of you guys being out there on the Eastern Seaboard, very interested to know what the chatter is, how much it's being talked about on sports radio. Of course, in the New York area, it certainly has the New York Rangers to compete with in the Stanley Cup Final right now. So I'll start with you, Jody. What's the level of excitement out there as far as another potential Triple Crown winner? We haven't seen the possibility in a couple of years. It seems from a distance like everybody seems fired up about it and talking about it, but I can't really tell as much here in flyover country. What's it like on the East Coast?
It's getting its good due of attention, what it deserves to get, but I would not say over the top because over these past 30-plus years where we haven't had a Triple Crown winner, we've had 11 horses come to Belmont with the chance to do just that, and every single one of them has been denied or come up short and just hasn't been able to get the job done. So I believe that there are a lot of quasi-casual racing fans that will believe we'll have a Triple Crown when we see we have a Triple Crown and aren't going to put their hopes and beliefs out there ahead of time. And again, California Chrome isn't undefeated. We've had undefeated horses come to Belmont Park with the chance to not only win the Triple Crown but continue an undefeated season. That's not in play here. So I'd say it's getting very good coverage. I think there is a percentage of people that are excited about it. I think Belmont can bank on a 90,000 to a 100,000 kind of crowd on Saturday, but I don't think they're going to top the one that they had with Smarty Jones 10 years ago. So I on a scale of excitement level, scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably put it about a 7.5.
That's about what I would have guessed, strangely enough. Okay, that was my thought. Steve, what do you think? What are you noticing as far as the level of excitement out there, how much it's on people's lips, how much the media is covering it, et cetera?
Well, as a lifelong Ranger fan and a lifelong horse racing fan, I'd have to say the Rangers have taken over the town. The Yankees, 500, the Mets, not so much. No football, no Knicks. I think it's kind of a Ranger town. There is a buzz. But I have to agree, we've been to the well so many times with two of the three. If some horse doesn't win the Derby and the Preakness, I hate to say it, but the Belmont is just another race now. Once upon a time, it was still a major Triple Crown race, and it meant a whole lot. Nowadays in horse racing, the only time there's real excitement for the Belmont is now when you have a horse who's won the first two. But as Jody said, 11 times in the past, since affirmed in 1978, we've been to this place many, many, many times, 11 times, that's a lot, and those horses are 0 for 11. I happen to think personally they should change the timing of the Triple Crown races. I've written for years at WFAN.com and before that at MSG's website. It should be first Saturday in May, first Saturday in June, first Saturday in July. A couple of years ago, Dwayne Lucas came out and said it. This year, the Pimlico president said it. But there's also been a pushback. You know, you have to be a great horse to do this three times in 5 weeks, et cetera, et cetera. I analogize that to pitchers. We don't make pitchers go out and go nine innings anymore. I think to make these three-year-old horses race three times in 5 weeks, the way they've been bred and the way they've been trained, I think is ridiculous. Having said that, Art Sherman, who we should mention, of course, the 77-year-old trainer of California Chrome, is such an old-timer. He was Swafts' exercise rider in 1955. Swafts won the 55 Derby. So maybe he trains him up a little more than the other trainers do now, and maybe that gives him an advantage. I think I'm actually going to write an article at FAN.com tomorrow saying there might be a negative if California Chrome wins the Triple Crown, because now they're going to keep the timing of the races the way it is. And there's a real split in the industry on that. I think for the betterment of the horses, they can't talk. And again, the way they're trained and the way they're raced nowadays, they are not trained to race this often. They just aren't. And I think that could be damaging. And I think, again, we wouldn't make a pitcher go out and go nine innings every start, which was the way it was 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Very well said. And that's something that we've talked about off air, I know, as well. Jody, what are your thoughts on that? First of all, on whether you think it's a good idea to space it out a little bit more evenly like this and give a little bit of a bigger break. And in any instance, the result on Saturday, if California Chrome wins it, if there might be a lot of sentiment in any case to be like, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
As Steve said, there's a major split in the industry as to whether the formatting of the Triple Crown should be changed. There's a major split on this show because Steve thinks it should be changed, and I absolutely do not. I think it has to stay exactly the way it is because horse racing is an industry that does lean a lot on its past history. And we're going to, if California Chrome wins, debate whether he's an all-time great or not, just because of the crew that he's running against. If this was spread out over a two-month period, then you could never compare him to an Affirmed or a Secretariat or any of the other great horses that have come before him and achieved what he achieved, which is a Triple Crown. No, I think it must stay the same. Just because sports changes doesn't mean it always changes for the better. Steve's right when he says we don't ask pitchers to go nine innings anymore. Well, that's why we don't have great pitchers. That's why we don't have a Bob Gibson or a Tom Seaver or a Steve Carlton or a Sandy Koufax or any of those pitchers. No one compares today's starting pitchers to the pitchers of yesteryear because they just don't accomplish as much. They are treated with kid gloves, and it ends up everyone having to have Tommy John surgery anyway. So we could debate the merits of pitching and underpitching and using and overusing pitches for another half hour on top of it. But I would be greatly against changing the Triple Crown in the way that it's run. It is the test of champions. And if you want to win the Triple Crown, then yes, you need to train your horse for that. You need to attempt to breed your horse for that. If you just want to run once every 8 weeks, like a lot of other trainers do, and run in grade two, grade three races and take your parts of your $100,000, $200,000 purses, you can do that as well. And you can keep your horse sounder, and he can be more comfortable in the barn eating his oats and hay. But if you want to win the Triple Crown, you know what it takes to achieve it when you've got your two-year-old and you're dreaming the dream that someday he could be the one. Well, then start your training then and get him ready for the three toughest races he's ever going to run.
Well, in any event, I like how you guys are both making the comparison with baseball because these may be the two sports that lean on their history the most as far as making comparisons and who's better, and you go to the stats, you go to how they performed, et cetera. So as a follow-up on that, Jody, do you think that it would make it even harder to compare in terms of if you spaced out the races versus, let's say we come to regard this field a California Chrome, let's say he wins the Triple Crown and we regard it as a historically bad field. Would you still regard it as closer to what Triple Crown winners in the past have done than you would if it was a good field and it was spaced out a month per race?
Now I'll use a different analogy. I'll go to the boxing analogy instead of baseball. Some people have downgraded accomplishments of champions because they say, well, you know, at the time that they were there, they never beat anybody. They just didn't face a great tough field. That when Lennox Lewis was beating absolutely everyone for the heavyweight championship, well, he's got no one to fight against. You can only fight against those that they put in front of you. On the Triple Crown Trail, you can only compete against those that come in your year. So I will not hold it against California Chrome that he beat a lot of, I think, only good three-year-olds, not any other great three-year-olds. The other thing that you have is, of course, the teletimer, which can tell you whether he's putting up outrageously good performance via time and your own eyes and judgment and the like. But if he wins the Triple Crown, I will call him a great horse. To this point, I think he's between a good and a very good horse. If he wins the Belmont on Saturday, he will escalate to a great horse for me, because if you win these three races in this climate, as Steve is talking about, that we just don't breed the horses for this anymore, that they're not trained to go this distant, go this often, and quickly turn around and the like, that will add to his accomplishments. So I will call him a great horse if he does win on Saturday.
Well, that's good. Going to boxing as well. That's another sport that obviously leans on its history a lot as far as comparisons go. I know that your old broadcast colleague, Rich Mancuso, would, of course, approve of bringing boxing into this for a point of comparison. And at the risk of, again, stretching perhaps to make a point here, we look at what could be a very, very unlikely week of events broadcast on the NBC family of networks, stretching from 11 o'clock Monday night on USA with the breakup of the field coming out of nowhere, seemingly, to a potential Triple Crown on Saturday on the mothership NBC. So let's take a look at what we think our predictions are going to be for this thing. I will go California Chrome, Ride on Curlin, and Metal Count as my win place show. Jody, how do you see it stacking up?
Well, I tried to beat California Chrome in the Kentucky Derby and was foolishly, I was mistaken, and I shouldn't have. He looked like the best horse on paper, but I just said you can't, he's not that good on paper that you could take 2-1 or 5-2, whatever is going to go up on Derby Day. So I looked at it from a wagerer's standpoint, which I think most people do. When they go to the track, they go to try and make a couple bucks. So I made that mistake. I didn't think there was any way he could lose the Preakness. I used him on top. Unfortunately, I'm still trying to pick the second best horse in the Preakness. So I'm 0-2 as far as putting through the windows in the two Triple Crown races so far. But I did know that California Chrome was going to win the Preakness and said so. I'm going to try and beat him again. And I think there's a legitimate horse that can do so. And it's the 11-horse Tonalist, who will break from the outside. Steve kind of touched on it earlier. He hasn't had great speed up in front of him. The speed that has carried the first two legs of the Triple Crown, I thought, was cheap speed and had no chance to stay there. And when California Chrome made his move, there was no one that was going to fight him off. I think Tonalist can. I've gone back and watched the Peter Pan, which was run less than a month ago at Belmont Park on a little bit of a sloppy track that day. And he made the lead so easily in that race, it was ridiculous. He didn't even come out of the gates all that fast, waited till past the turn, and then just basically flew to the lead without much of an asking from Joe Rosario. And a couple of horses tried to make moves on him, and he never even had to open them up. He rode them for, I would say, about 10 or 12 strides in the stretch and just pulled away and won by four. His Peter Pan victory was as impressive as any victory I think California Chrome has had, including his San Antonio Derby win this year, which was very impressive as well. Christophe Clement's one of the best trainers on the planet, and he's very well known for having grass horses. He prefers to train his horses on draft. They breed them for the grass and the like. He hasn't even thought about putting this horse on grass. Started him on dirt, has kept him on dirt, and is now in the Belmont Stakes on dirt. It tells you that Christophe Clement said this horse prefers dirt and is ready to go there and run as fast as possible. I think the 11 post is not terrible. It's not the 18 or the 19 or the 20. It's the far outside post, but it's only 11. And Belmont is a big enough track, and you've got a long enough straightaway to get out of there and not be caught wide going into the turn. I think he's got the speed to get close to the top, if not first, second, sit off of California Chrome, or if there's anyone else who wants to go kamikaze and set some really fast fractions. This horse can also rate, and I think sit right off the pace. He's the fresher horse. His breeding says he can get the mile and a half, so I'm going to take a shot. They've made him 8-1 on the morning line. If I can get 8-1 on Belmont Stakes Day, I'd be quite happy with Tonalist. I think he's the horse that can beat California Chrome. And then I think it's a toss-up between California Chrome and Wicked Strong. California Chrome will be slowing late. Wicked Strong will be coming late. Does Wicked Strong get there for second? Maybe. Does California Chrome hang on for second? I don't think Mr. Sherman will quite care if it's not first, finishing second or third. While the purse will be different, I think will be quite disappointing for them. So for you long shot players, I'll take Wicked Strong second and California Chrome third, which may get you a little bit higher payoff on your trifecta if you're going down that road. So I'll say Tonalist over Wicked Strong over California Chrome.
Excellent. A great tip for everyone. Clip and save right there. Bob, what are your thoughts on how it's going to shake out?
I'm going to go Tonalist as well. If you had asked me first, I would have had the exact same order of finish as Jody, but I did want to ask a few questions, Jody. I have one particular, because this is why I went back and forth over Tonalist. He had a lung infection before the wood, obviously, that knocked him off the Derby trail. He came back, obviously, very strong in the Peter Pan. Now he has a win over the track at Belmont, which I always think is a good thing to have. They added blinkers for the Peter Pan. That obviously helped him brush to the lead more. Here's my concern, Jody, and you go back, like I do, many, many years, 20, 25, 30, 35 years ago, if you found out, and tell me if you know this, not only have I not heard a discussion of it anywhere, I haven't seen it written anywhere, but Joel Rosario rode, of course, Tonalist in the Peter Pan, he only carried 117 pounds. And this year in the Belmont, as they always do in the Triple Crown, he's carrying 126. In the last 5 years, has something happened where picking up weight is not a factor, Jody Mack? I look for articles. I look for discussions. I look for comments. I can't find one person that even mentioned that. So when I say I like Tonalist, and I do, that's the one thing that I think if we were doing this show 25 years ago, we would have said, oh, he's picking up 9 pounds. I don't like him. Did I miss something in the last 5 years?
No, you don't. No, you haven't. Not for me. You and I have been hanging around the track, going to the track, sit with players, consider ourselves players, and everyone has their own varying amount of weight, pardon the pun, that they put on the weight that the horses have to carry. I think it's a factor. I don't make it a major factor. And what limits what I will hold against Tonalist for this, as you're right, he's adding 9 pounds from his previous rate. But prior to that, earlier this year, he had carried 122 in his maiden special weight down in Florida. So he's never carried 126 before, but he has carried 122 and won. So I won't say, oh, just because he carried 117 last year, the 9 pounds is going to be too much for him to overcome. Yes, it's a little bit of a handicap, and certainly California Chrome and the others who competed in the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby have already been to that task. But that it's not enough for me to change my opinion that the horse that's sitting on the biggest race is Tonalist, even if he's carrying a couple extra pounds than he ever has before.
Okay, I'm thrilled that you consider that because, again, I can't even find a conversation. This is the first conversation I've heard about that. But I agree as well. I'll go Tonalist, and I'm going to give you four or five horses to play underneath in triples. I would have gone Tonalist, Wicked Strong, California Chrome. Since Jody did that, I would play Tonalist to win, and I'd box the following five horses in triples. Only cost you five times 420 for a triple ticket. Wicked Strong, California Chrome, Commanding Curve, Metal Count, and Ride on Curlin. I think, as always, the right combination. Now, if Tonalist wins, you're going to get some good prices, even if California Chrome is second. But I think that combination of groups of horses, again, I like Wicked Strong in the Derby. I just don't think horses coming from the back can win the Belmont. If they do, I'll be the first to tip my cap. If California Chrome, I'm almost rooting for him, even though I would never bet him, because if he does win the Triple Crown, I do think it's great for the sport. We have our differences, of course, in the differences between the races. I don't know if I'd compare Jody Mack. I don't know if I'd compare, I don't know, Pedro Martinez, Roger Clemens before steroids, Greg Maddux. I don't know if I'd compare them to the greats of old, but I think they're at least in the conversation, Randy Johnson at his best. But I know exactly what you're saying, and since I grew up in that era, I'm totally with Gibson and Koufax, even Steve Carlton, who had the greatest season ever for a terrible team. I get all that, but I don't know if people in the 50s and 60s and 70s who lived in the 20s said, these guys don't compare to Cy Young. He pitched every third day. Or Walter Johnson, come on, he had 417 wins. You know, it's a very interesting generational conversation. So I understand your tradition position, but I'll just disagree with it in terms of we'll agree to disagree in terms of spacing out the races.
That's fine with me.
Very interesting. Well, we'll be seeing what happens. Obviously, it's going to have a lot to say about the future of horse racing in the next couple of years. A Triple Crown winner, how much is that going to do to spark renewed interest in the sport? There's been a lot of speculation about it over time. It's been 36 years since we've had one, and we'll see if that drought ends on Saturday. But in any event, the conversation was a pleasure, as I knew that it would be. I want to thank both Jody McDonald and Steve Callis for being a part of this today. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Look forward to discussing horse racing and other subjects with you fine fellows in the future. Thank you, fellas.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Jody Mack.
You got it.
Excellent. Really appreciate it, and thank you all, everybody, for tuning in for FDH Lounge mini episode number 430.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics,
NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.